Second hour of First Edition here on WEAA 88.9. I'm Sean Yoes, your host. Thank you for joining us or sticking with us for our second hour on this Monday. The entrepreneur PNC Coffee and Conversation entrepreneur discussion that was supposed to be tomorrow has been postponed due to the inclement weather. That community conversation powered by PNC Bank has been postponed until a later date. Keep listening to WEAA and check WEAA.org for further details for a new date for that conversation about entrepreneurship sponsored by PNC Bank. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at First Edition 88.9, and don't forget to like and follow us on Twitter and on Facebook, rather, at First Edition on WEAA 88.9 FM. Go to WEAA.org on our homepage for the latest podcast of First Edition, or subscribe to our iTunes podcast, First Edition. Also, hit me up on my personal Twitter account. The tag is at Sean Yoes. That is my name, SEANYOES. Or go to my Facebook page. If you have information, insight, or breaking news you want to share with me, I'll share with the people unless you don't want me to, and I won't. Coming up in the second hour, as we anticipate this oncoming snowstorm, the new hour of power, dual inspiration, Khadijah Ali Coleman and Bathsheba Smithson are both here. They're going to be talking about the theme, trust in thyself in times of doubt. We need that conversation. I know I need that conversation. I'll speak for myself. But before we get to the new hour of power, or rather the dual inspiration segment with Khadijah and Bathsheba, we want to turn to Chase Turner. He is a graphic designer and creative strategist of I Chase Art LLC. Chase Turner, welcome to First Edition. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Sure. We want to talk about branding and the different aspects of it and how it's implemented. But describe, give us your full description from your perspective of what branding is and then why it's so important.
Well, simply put, a lot of people use branding with different definitions, but the basic premise of it is that branding is simply how your audience perceives you. It's about perception. And that's a basic way that I would put it. Anything else would kind of be getting into the details and getting into the weeds. Every single person has a brand. You have a brand, I have a brand, and we have these different aspects of our personalities, of the way we dress, the way that we speak, and that creates a perception that our friends and our family have with us in that same way that can apply to a business, a product, or a service.
Well, that makes sense. I mean, I've said to people many times, and without, you know, having a full necessarily understanding or of it being branding, but the reality is if you don't control your narrative, somebody else will control your narrative.
Absolutely.
And that, I know for a fact, is an incredibly important thing to comprehend and understand, regardless of what your profession is. Let me ask you this, though, Chase. In your mind, are there different kind of strategies, if you will, for branding or different process for branding dependent upon the business that you find yourself in, if you get my meaning?
Absolutely. Different businesses have different models and different products. They have different target markets. You have to consider all of those things, because something that might be appealing to one group of people might not be appealing to another group. So you have to learn how to have a conversation and be able to speak the language of the audience that you're trying to target.
Got it. So talk about and you know, go into as much detail as you need to. The difference between branding and marketing. What are the differences?
Well, so marketing would be one of those tools that you would use in the scheme of branding. See, because marketing is simply there that it's used to drive awareness, which is ultimately there to drive profits there. But branding has to be this centralized point of how you do all those things. Branding determines how you market. Branding determines how you advertise, how you speak, what channels you're going to speak on. So when people use those terms to say branding and marketing, as if they're the same thing, marketing would just be a pedal on the wheel that is branding.
Okay. That makes sense. The first time I heard anybody refer to working on their brand was Kim Kardashian, ironically enough. And you can have whatever opinion you may have of Kim Kardashian. She certainly knows how to push her brand and has done so incredibly successfully. At least from the aspect of making it fiscally viable for her.
Certainly. I mean, she's actually a perfect example of brand, because if you ask most people, they can't tell you what she does,
exactly.
But they know her name.
Right.
That's an excellent example.
Well, I mean, and talk about that, though. I mean, they don't know what she does, but they know her name. In your mind, Chase, is there an official kind of start time, if you will, for when the quote unquote branding kind of came to become part of the American lexicon? I mean, what are your thoughts about that?
I don't think that there has ever been an official time. I think people have just become more aware of it because the internet has allowed us to get more access to information. But historically, people have been using the same techniques as far as branding since civilization. It's a very old thing. But we're just now becoming aware of it, and we're kind of fine-tuning it and making it more sophisticated.
So let's talk about social media. Ubiquitous, burgeoning. I mean, it seems to grow every day. Given the fact of what I just laid out, the fact that social media seems to evolve and change every single day and become bigger every day, how do you kind of wrap your let's give a specific example. If someone wants to start a business, I mean, I don't even know, I don't need to necessarily specify what type, but if someone wants to start a business, how do you begin to get your arms around the aspect of social media and how you use it to build that brand?
So the thing with social media is that it has completely devastated the advertising market and how people have gotten received information there. See, now you can directly speak to people,
right.
And that's really what the power of social media is. So when you're a new business or you're trying to sell something there, you really have to kind of gauge what people are saying. Because you can directly see on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram what people want now. So there's not this guessing game that you used to have to do in the past with business. So you can really, like, even as an ordinary everyday person, you can spend a few hours looking at social media and see what are people wanting to see? What are they really after? Is this something that's not being met? Is there some need? Is there a problem I can solve? And if you can really tap into that, then you're going to have a lot of success on social media because the market's already there. You're just giving people what they've been asking for.
Indeed. Let's talk a little bit about what you do specifically, Chase. But before we get into that conversation, I want to give the ID. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to First Edition here on WEAA 88.9. I'm Sean Yoes, your host. excuse me. We're in the second hour of the show talking to Chase Turner. He's a graphic designer and creative strategist of iChase Art LLC. So, Chase, talk about your work as a graphic designer and when did you begin and where, you know, talk about the kind of what you touch upon right now.
So I've been designing for a little over 10 years now. I sold my first logo when I was about 15. I've seen those processes. I built my first website when I was 12. I didn't actually sell it or do anything. So I've seen how design has changed over the past few years. And I've noticed how important as it's been becoming in regards to how business, and you have sites like Fiverr now that where people are just on demand. They need designs, they need materials, so they're going all across the internet to try to get those resources. But I've worked with clients for years, And I've started to notice this tail end where the effect or the impact is not just in the designs, but there's a strategy that has to be implemented behind that. It's just kind of like you can go to a job interview in a nice suit, but if you don't have the skills for the job, it doesn't really matter. Mm. So I've really started trying to implement the strategy behind it. So I start collaborating and working with my clients on not only, how they look, but also the positioning of it. Like, where, you know, how should you release these graphics? What time should you release the graphics? What's your audience going to look like? What's the longevity? Just factoring in those things, which is really important, especially nowadays, because as you said, things are becoming so ubiquitous. There's a lot of noise out there, and you have to really be able to distinguish yourself. And the only real way to do that is to come up with a plan and a strategy, because most people aren't doing that.
Indeed, indeed. So let's talk about specifically logo creation. I mean, how do you even, I mean, if somebody sits down and says, Chase, I want you to craft a logo for me. I mean, you literally have sort of an infinite, palette to draw from, I suspect. I would suspect, and I'm saying this as a novice, but I suspect that you probably do work like a journalist. You have to sit down and interview somebody to get an understanding of where they're coming from and where they want to go, I guess.
Absolutely.
Well, talk about that process in some detail.
So with the thing about a logo is that is your identifying mark. And the first question I'll normally ask with somebody is, what are you trying to accomplish? Because then that will kind of determine the questions that I ask. If it's something as simple as, hey, you're just trying to do an event, and this is just going to be a one-off, well, we probably don't need to do too much detail long-term, and I wouldn't end up doing a whole bunch of research like long-term. But asking questions like that, if you're trying to start a business and you're really trying to grow something or you're really trying to build something up, well, then there has to be those long conversations, and we have to come up with a long-term strategy. Do I need to come up with something like really quickly, or do you want to come up with something that's going to last for a long time? And obviously that would take more time to try to factor in all the different variations and all the different concepts. But that would be where I would really start with the process.
Uh-huh. Let me ask you of the kind of mainstream logos, some of the things that are more ubiquitous and more in the minds of people constantly. Talk about some of the most effective ones, because we know they're effective because we like them. But I think that in a lot of ways, we don't really know from a professional perspective why they are effective. Can we talk about that?
Sure.
Okay.
The most effective logos are the simplest logos, because really you want your logo to be so simple that, let's say, for instance, a child could remember and draw your logo. Those have just statistically and historically proven to be the best logos. And I actually remember I was looking at a book last week, in fact, from the 1950s, and it was just a bunch of old trademark and logos from various different industries, the insurance companies, oil industry. But I noticed myself gravitating towards certain logos more than others. And these are from over 50 years ago, and all of them, the consistency that they had was that they were all incredibly simple.
Huh, that's interesting. Go break that down, because I think that makes sense to me. I mean, the cleaner, more simple logos are the ones that I'm kind of more attracted to as well.
Absolutely, and when you think about it, with design and logos in general, it all comes down to communication.
Right.
And it's kind of works in the same way when you're working with language. You just kind of want to get kind of straight to the point. When people are adding all these filler words, and you can tell when someone's nervous because they start using terms like all the time. And you can reflect that visually when you're seeing something. You want to just get straight to the point. That's why icons are so effective. We can see those on our phones. We can see them on websites. And because we have adopted them in our minds to mean something. And we do the same thing with the logo.
Interesting. If you think of the iconic logos, Apple, I mean, that's the one that jumps out at me, at least. And there are, you know,
many, Apple, Nike.
Yeah, yeah, you pulled it right out of my mouth. Nike, even. I mean, the pro sports, the NFL, the NBA, of course.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's but that's, I mean, that's literally a business or a process that can make or break you on as far as millions of dollars is concerned, multi-millions of dollars.
Absolutely. Because the reality is that if people can easily forget you, I mean, you like you're done. So you want to try to be as memorable as possible, and that's why even when you consider a logo, even considering a name as well is also just as important, and seeing how those two things can connect. I mean, like if you think about Apple, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like Apple. It's a really simple word. It's very easy to remember, and then you've got the Apple symbol. I mean, it's very hard to forget something like that. Now, the other issue that you could run into, for instance, if you're going with something like an Apple, is that because it's so simple, it might become obscure.
Hmm.
So then it becomes about your model itself. Like, are you actually, what's the unique part that you're actually providing? Because if you're providing a unique product or service, which people are like, that's really innovative, that's really creative, Well, then it can work in your advantage because people are remembering your brand for its innovation, but it's also easy in their mind because they can just think back to the simplicity of your name and your logo.
So then the question, it's almost like the chicken and the egg. I mean, the brand, does the brand build the reputation, or does the reputation build the brand? Because I would argue that early on, you know, the brand of Apple didn't necessarily carry a lot of weight, but as the company progressed and grew, obviously the brand, that brand, that logo, that Apple, carried more weight.
Yeah, you know, and different people have different philosophies on that, because like you said, it's like the chicken and the egg argument. But what I've found is that, you know, the principles of branding, the principles of communication, the principles of design, those are universal principles. And what, when you have a company like Apple or any of these big Fortune 500 companies, we had to consider and understand they have a lot of money to put into marketing and advertising, which makes a huge difference. Now, if you're just starting out or you don't have money like that, well, you know, you don't want to be spending all your money on advertising. You want to be spending your money on actually making your product better, on, you know, providing better services, on putting your profits back into your business. So one of the things that can help that is if you off the bat establish a strong brand, off the bat, take right. the time to actually think about, like, your company, your brand, your mission, your purpose, how you can uniquely position yourself, and ultimately it'll work out better for you because then you can get that loyalty from an audience rather than having to spend a whole bunch of money to try to get into people's faces, because that's really what a lot of those companies do, especially if you have a name that's kind of made up or it's obscure, people don't know what it means.
Right.
So you have to spend thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars to try to educate the public
right.
on what your name means.
Interesting. Well said. Let me take a couple of phone calls before we finish, Chase. Let's go to Hank sure. in Baltimore first. Hank, you're on with Chase Turner. How you doing?
How you doing today, Mr. Joseph?
All right, brother.
Turner.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Turner, as a graphic designer, right, I have a small dilemma. I'm not a designer. I got my logo from somebody. My logo and my name is perfect, right? But
mm-hmm.
I had a partner who went and put an italic in the middle of my name and took my name, right?
Mm.
What I want to okay. know is, can he also take my logo?
Hmm. Well,
my graphic designer has already trademarked the picture, my logo, right? So it's already trademarked. He can't do it, but by me not trademarking because my artist trademarked it, can he take it is what I'm asking.
So, well,
hello?
So you said the graphic designer has your logo trademarked.
Hello?
Hank,
yeah.
he said your graphic designer trademarked. Hank just hung up. I don't know what has happened, but he couldn't hear us. But it looked like you were going down the right path, Chase. But I mean, it is what it is.
yeah.
Let me take one more. Let's take one more call, real quick. Let's go to Jones in Pikesville. Jones, you're on with Chase Turner.
Bull down, gentlemen. Red Bull down.
Hey, what's up, Jones? How you doing, bro?
How you doing, Jones?
Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Hello?
Yeah, hello?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Yeah.
Hello?
Obviously.
Sean, can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you, bro.
Okay, I don't know what happened. Red Bull down. How y'all doing?
All right, brother.
Good.
Listen,
how are you?
You know, you mentioned Apple. One of the things that caught my attention in your comment about simplicity of icons is that the more sophisticated a lot of these companies become, the one thing that they very seldomly do is change the logo, because after a period of time, it become etched in our minds. Because one time I remember with the Jerry West logo on the NBA, they had toyed with making it Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
You know, the jump man. And I guess at that particular point, they said, well, why are we doing that? Because this thing is so simple, and it attracts the attention from people all around the world. The Nike swoosh. All of those, as technology gets better, those successful companies don't toy with their icons. I mean, with their logo.
Don't mess with old Coke.
Right. Exactly.
Right. Yeah. Very well said, John.
Thank you.
Yes, sir. Go ahead, Chase.
Yeah. Now, it's definitely something to consider. That's a great point. And when you see a lot of these big companies, they start kind of changing stuff. You'll find that even with all this money that some of these companies have, this is something that some of them don't just understand. They just want to change to change. And unfortunately, you've seen like some logos. Like I'll say, Pepsi is a great example. When they changed their logo a few years ago, it kind of shook some people because they were used to seeing something else. And there were a lot of people, especially in the design community, that didn't necessarily like what the change was, didn't feel that it was necessarily a better improvement. Likewise with Taco Bell, they just recently changed their logo as well and some of their branding. And it's still kind of nuanced there. There's still some people that kind of play a guessing game. And that's the thing about even with the design. There are these universal principles, but there's still this objectivity and people experimenting consistently.
Right. Chase Turner is a graphic designer and creative strategist of iChase Art LLC. Chase, really interesting conversation and a lot of great information you provided, brother. We appreciate you.
Thank you, Sean.
Indeed. Appreciate you. Yeah. Very, very, very well said. Really interesting unpacking all of that. We got to take a break, though. Chase, thank you. And go to our dual inspiration segment, Khadijah Ali Coleman and Bathsheba Smith, and we'll be here. Stay tuned. You're listening to First Edition. First Edition here on WEAA 88.9. I am Sean Yoes, your host, winding down a Monday evening, and it's time for Dual Inspiration. On the phone are my friends, Khadijah Ali Coleman and Bathsheba Smithen, the co-host, the co-host of Dual Inspiration. Bathsheba, Khadijah, welcome back. Good to hear from you.
Thank you so much. Glad to be here.
How come I got to be in the studio with the snow coming, but y'all don't have to be?
Y'all You're the captain. The captain.
Oh, the captain goes down. Captain goes down with the ship. Is that what we're saying here? All right.
Okay. That's what happens.
I mean, y'all are supposed to be inspiring and everything. Y'all are supposed to be all right. Okay, you're right though. Captain will go down with the ship. I just appreciate that y'all taking time to talk about this, because this right here, as they say, will preach. Trust in thyself in times of doubt. I mean, who doesn't need that narrative, that sermon today, for real? I mean, I'm going to start with you, Khadijah. I mean, these, especially in these days, I mean, anybody who's striving to do anything, doubt creeps in. That's,
exactly. Yeah. And it's so hard to even know a lot of times who you are enough to trust in who you are, you know, to really even be connected to what we call intuition, what we call instinct. So this topic is very timely. We've talked in previous shows about, you know, the loops or the disconnects that we have because we're on these loops that we operate on typically in our routines day to day. And when you are so routinized and caught in this loop, you tend to not listen to anything that really is internal, because it's not part of the program, you know?
Right. Bathsheba, jump in, if you will.
I think that we have to begin to look at the origins of doubt, right? Where does doubt stem from? And I think about, you know, I have this thing called voices of history, right? The voices of your historical past, your personal background, some of those things kind of come to the surface when you're getting ready to take on an endeavor or getting ready to make a relationship decision. Those voices kind of get in the way of you making a decision about what needs to be done. And even though you may know the truth, you may begin to listen to that voice from history, maybe a voice that came from like a parent or friends that were not as positive as they should have been. And then you also have what I term perceived reality. You have perception is reality, right? And so I don't know if any of you have ever been in a situation where you're observing people's mannerisms and their gestures, and so you kind of pick up on what you think is happening, and it might not necessarily be the case. And so as you sit and you perceive the situation to be what it is because of the lens that you're looking through, it causes you to doubt. And so that, I think that's part of the origins of doubt. And once you understand where that doubt is coming from, that's how you can begin tackling it.
Well, I mean, you just really laid a whole lot out there, Bathsheba, to be unpacked, because when you talk about doubt, you're talking about the root of doubt is fear. And when you start talking about your own personal history, I mean, those things that have caused you pain or have caused you discomfort, insecurity, you know, heartache, whatever, those are markers that force us to, you know, tread lightly in certain areas and it's not necessarily reasonable to do so if you're standing back from an objective position on it, because each situation is a new situation, and you can't attach past behaviors or past scenarios to new situations all the time.
But even though it may seem unreasonable, a lot of times what we do is rationalize it, and we do call it reason. And doubt doesn't always have to feel as if when you're doubting, or you are this origin of doubt doesn't always spring from a place of necessarily abuse or something negative, as it may spring from a place of just it's routine, or it's something. Mm-hmm. It's the way that we do things. It's tradition. This is how it happens.
Right. That's good.
You know, and we have experiences. This is just the way that it is. I was sharing with Bathsheba earlier when we were preparing for the show, and I was telling her that this commitment to being nice, you know, and a lot of times we're disconnected from our intuition or from our inner self or our inner truths because we have this commitment to being nice, because we have this commitment to what we appear to be to the external world. And it's this movie, I'm not going to say the title, Bathsheba gives me, she helps me with making sure I don't spoil movies for people because I can do that, right?
Okay.
So I'm not going to say the title of the movie, but it's a movie. In this movie, the main characters discover who the villain is. And they had an opportunity before they encounter the villain, they had an opportunity to get away from him. But as he does his wonderful monologue where he says that, basically, rather than run away from me, you saw me coming and you wanted to be nice to me because you didn't want to seem impolite. And he said, that's how I get the majority of my victims is because...
Oh, I know what movie that is.
Uh-huh. They had this commitment to being, wasn't that deep though?
Yeah.
Because you think like, whoa, how many situations do I find myself in that I know internally are not good for me, but I just don't want to be disagreeable. I just don't want people to think that I'm not nice. And so a lot of times we think that this failure to listen to our inner self or to be true to ourselves is always born from this place of something. So when it's really is just been ingrained in us because that's just the way that it's been.
Well, and I would argue or suggest to both of you, Bathsheba and Khadija, that mm-hmm. women struggle with that infinitely more than men do.
I would agree.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I don't know if I could necessarily say that I agree because I wouldn't be able to measure where, you know, males are with their understanding of situations and whether or not they doubt because I'm female. But I think that males don't let me just say, I think males may not communicate it as much as females because we are very, you know, We like to communicate a lot, so you find that females talk a whole lot more than males. But I think that it's very possible that males and females struggle just as much as the other sex, just because I know that there are times where males, you know, are dealing with certain situations and they like to process. I remember talking to my brother, and he said, you girls, you could just get together and start pouring out all your information in front of complete strangers, and it takes males a very long time to get to the point where they start discussing some of the issues that they have with their brothers.
Right.
And so I guess I want to push back a little bit on that to say that it might be more apparent with females than it is with males, because we are very vocal.
Well, I was actually speaking specifically about struggling with being nice and polite. Yeah. That's what I was really more.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I don't know. So you think that females are more willing to compromise what they believe more so than males? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I don't know. I'm not saying specific. No, you put me in a trick bag, Bathsheba. I ain't trying to get in there. I'm not getting in there.
Well, can I say in Sean's defense, and what I understood him to mean is that it's not so much that it's not about necessarily even how we may actually feel, but just in terms of when we think of society as a whole, and when a woman is being more more assertive or less willing to be agreeable, then there are a lot more terms and negative connotations that are attributed to who she is than when that same behavior is displayed by a man. And we are definitely coming to a point where we're seeing some of the traditional or the expected behaviors kind of beginning to merge. But we've come a long way, and we still aren't in a place where a woman can behave in a way that's not agreeable and not be called the B word or called something else or looked at in a different way that's not positive, where that attribute actually looks powerful when coming from a man.
Yeah, I agree with that.
That's good.
And that helps us go over into talking about just like business and being able to feel secure in business decisions, right? Like, and as a female, I love that you brought that up, Sean.
Okay.
Because it is very true, right? You know, I found myself in situations where I'm getting ready to, you know, negotiate a deal or just, you know, just have conversations with people of the opposite sex. And it's almost as if they second guess you automatically. And so it makes it very easy for that doubt to creep in. Like, am I doing, you know, am I being too assertive? Am I being too aggressive? And I think what you said is so true, so very true. What you said, Khadijah, and you too, Sean, is that women will probably be more nice just because of the pressure of our society. Because I can see that in business relationships. Now, I don't know if that's the case in just relationships in general, but I can see that in business, and I also see it in artistry as well. Because I've struggled. When I started off my career, I struggled with it somewhat, and now I'm becoming more emboldened to just completely be myself and not worry about whether or not I'm not getting the response that I feel is due to me, or that it would be an equal response to that of a male. I just still need to be myself. So, and it takes time to not succumb to the doubt that comes in those situations.
Well, and then let's talk about how do we avoid situations, if we can. How do we avoid situations that cause us doubt? I mean, it seems almost inevitable, but I suspect that it isn't, at least from y'all's perspective. Talk about that a little bit.
Well, I actually I wrote a play in 2009 that is called Running Amok, and the premise is that there's these three women that just had babies, and a time in their careers where they were just shooting off in their career. They were at the pinnacle of the career, and they had these children, and then they're lost. They have no idea what comes next, and so they actually are meeting in a psychiatrist's office, and they meet this woman who comes in who basically has to remind them who they are. And so it's a musical. It actually is comedic in some points. But when one of the point, this doubt creeps in into one of the main characters, where she has no idea of where to go at this point in her life, because now she has this new responsibility and she doesn't feel valuable as she did before. And what I would say is that when doubt creeps in, at some point, we are forgetting who we are. We're disconnected from the things, from our strengths. I've talked about this before in terms of really approaching who we are before we can even approach other people from an asset-based approach. What are the things that that we do well? What are the things that we like to do? What are the things that allow us to show up into the world being who we truly are? And a lot of times we forget that because we're so quick to really make ourselves appear amenable to other people, whether it's us preparing ourselves for a job, having to look great when we show up for an interview. You know, I have people, I call it the resume mentality, that everything that they do is really about how good it's going to look on a resume. So they're not even in the present moment each time they're at a job or they're in the opportunity, because it's like, oh, this is going to look really good. And you just move on to the next opportunity instead of really being present in the place where you are right now. And then that's when we start to forget who we are, because everything that we do is operating on some type of timetable set by other people. So, you know, the point of my play was, or not the point, but the moral, or what ultimately happens, is that these women start to understand that having a baby doesn't mean that they then are shutting off that creative part of who they are, that valuable part of who they are, but it now starts to take a different turn. It starts to look different, and is different doesn't necessarily mean worse. And that a lot of us are very inflexible and unwilling to accept change for what it is. And that's where doubt then becomes the mantra or predominant, because we are disconnected from who we are.
So, and to that point, Bathsheba, what you just said, I mean, because it sounds like what y'all are talking about here is operating from a position of abundance as opposed to lack, right? And Bathsheba, when you take the position of I'm going to do my thing, I'm going to be me and not be worried about what people think about what my presentation is or how I do it, that's operating from a position of abundance. And therefore, doubt is hard for doubt when you're in that type of zone. Is that correct?
That's good. That's absolutely correct. I remember talking to one of my mentors, and there are two statements that stand out to me right now in this conversation. One of the things that my mentor said to me, she said, because we're talking about how to avoid doubt, she said, you've experienced darkness. Mm. And I don't know how you linked yourself up to darkness because you are light. But now that you know what darkness looks like, as soon as there's the appearance of darkness, mm. you encounter it, you run away from it as hard as you can.
Uh-huh.
That was one of the quotes that came to the surface. And then the second thing is I was talking to a girlfriend of mine about a friendship that I had. And I was still, you know, friends with the person at the time. And I was explaining everything about, like, my journey up to that point. And she said, well, Sheba, it sounds like you've experienced the love of God. So if you know what love is, why would you settle for anything less now?
Well,
and so I think being able to avoid doubt is when you've already experienced certain situations, right? I think that intuition or that discernment now has enhanced. It enhances. And so when situations arise again, you know, where you see somebody, you know, that some significant person, some person that may be significant in your life, or you're wishing that they could be significant in your life, you start noticing signs that you had seen previously, right? You had experienced darkness before. And so before you even engage, you decide not to engage at all because you know what that could entail. And so it's the same thing with doubt. And doubt is like being in a bad marriage, right? Like, so you decide, I know what can cause doubt in certain situations, and so let me avoid those situations that could possibly cause me to doubt myself. Or even, I might not necessarily need to avoid those situations, but I may be able to identify what the triggers are so that I can challenge myself to rise above them. Just, you know, i.e. me being in a business meeting. So I'm identifying, okay, I might be perceiving this situation to be the wrong way. And so, Sheba, check yourself. You know, like, check yourself. Don't worry about what you're seeing or what you perceive to be the case. Go ahead and still be yourself. So I think that's a way for you to avoid doubt, is to identify what your triggers are, what has happened in the past, and keep moving forward so that you can learn.
That makes sense to me. Khadijah, what do you think? How do you want to chime in as far as that's concerned?
I agree with everything that she said. I am committed to the belief that, we really have to have a sense of who we are before we can move forward. And we're not going to try new things. We're not going to make decisions and trust in the decisions that we're able to make unless we remember who we are, loved ones around us can do the reminding, but there has to be engaged activity on reflective thought. There has to be engaged activity, and you have to put that in your routine day to day of really sitting with your thoughts, really appraising, looking at the day before, looking at your accomplishments. I mean, for me, Facebook, I use social media to remind me of the things that I've done. You know, my memory, as I age, my memory is getting shot. But, you know, I love that how they remind you, they show you the pictures from years ago, and they remind you of relationships that you had with people or experiences that you had. And those are the kinds of things that we need to operate from this place of gratitude. And just those are the things that remind us who we are. And that spurs us to do greater things. You hear everyone saying, you know, I'm not in competition with anyone but myself. And in order to be in competition with yourself, and what that means is that you are always on a mission to make, to always be the best you can be, a better you at all times. The only way that you can do that is if you have an accurate and a clear idea of who you are.
Well, I think that should really kind of wind down the conversation, because ultimately, the older I get, the more I'm informed of who I am, right. And I'm clear on who I am, and that informs all my decisions and all my and my perspective going forward. It's harder and harder for doubt to really creep in as you evolve along that path, and you have a full understanding of who you are. Because that what it means is that there are certain things that you'll deal with, and other things that you won't deal with, and that those lines become less and less ambiguous.
Exactly. And you know, in when we even look at the music industry or Hollywood in general, when we see the music industry going for younger people and this quest for youth that you see becoming popular, well, the reality is that Hollywood and places like that, they want young people because they can mold them and shape them. And many young people have not come to self-actualization where they know what they want to do and where they want to be as an artist. And you don't really see conflict happening with these people that we see before our eyes grow in front of us on television or through music. We don't see conflict until they are at odds with what has been placed upon them and which is not of their own making. And so it's when I say these things, it's not, you know, hippie talk. it's really understanding that this sense of self is what drives us and motivates us and inspires us to create our greatest creations.
Go ahead, Bathsheba.
I kind of want to put a wrench in there, too, because we were talking about young people. I think the issue is definitely probably the doubt that creeps in for the younger generation. But as you get older and you have those experiences and you become wiser, there's a fine line between doubt and denial, right? And so for the person who knows, you know, more about themselves, we have to be very careful not to creep into denial.
Oh, come on.
To wear that rose-colored lens and not see things for what they are. We kind of talked about that in the Real Women session this weekend, and it really brought some things to surface. Just, you know, a lot of times for us, and I don't know about for males, but I just think in general that people have a hard time facing truth. And so sometimes we define it as doubt, but it's really just denial. Like, we don't want to face the truth about what the situation is.
Wow. I mean, it's funny, as I was talking about knowing yourself and being able to move in that knowledge, what you just said jumped into my spirit. Like, sometimes you can know yourself too much. And then you want a whole, like, I know this is, you know, you can be confronted with something, but because you decided that there's a position that you're going to take from who you are, then it's sometimes a little bit harder to really discern what is truly happening.
Right. That's good.
Yeah, that is good. That's definitely good. I mean, that's what the path is all about. I mean, you know, being able to, you know.
I think that's part of the way we can avoid those situations, too, is identifying those times where we don't want to face the truth, right? And I think that falls into so many categories, not wanting to face the truth in business, not wanting to face the truth in relationships, and that's, like, really huge relationships. Mm-hmm. And you know, just in artistry or whatever it is that you're doing, making sure that, and part of you is the fact that you want to deny something. So accepting that part about you too, and saying, okay, I'm actually wanting to deny what the truth is
So let me deal with that as well.
Mm. Khadijah, I'll give you the last word because we've got about a minute left.
Well, I just would like to invite people out. I have an anthology that my artist collective is presenting on March 18th at the Red Lion Hotel Inner Harbor. It's free, and I would love to meet people so we can talk about this and talk about other issues that we've talked about here on the Inspired segment. It's at 7 p.m., and I love the opportunity to always talk about being your authentic self, because I think a lot of times it stops us from really mobilizing and creating spaces that are real and that are inspired. So the closer that we can get to who we are authentically, I think that's when change and positive change starts to happen.
Well, Bathsheba, then real quick, what do you have coming up?
We actually have, if there are any young people out there, youth and young adults, and even families, we have Cage Free Voices Talent Showcase coming up at Impact Hub DC on April 15th from 7 until 9:30. So you guys can come on out. You can find out more about it at on Facebook. If you go to the Cage Free Voices page, you'll find out more about the event. And it's family friendly, it's positive. You get to see youth and young adults between the ages of 13 and 25 compete to get studio time and also compete in the WPGC's The Opportunity.
Okay, very good. Bathsheba Smithen and Khadijah Ali Coleman are the co-host of the Dual Inspiration segment here on First Edition in the new Hour of Power. Khadijah and Bathsheba, it's always a pleasure, sisters. Thank you. Thank you both so much. I appreciate you.
Have a great one.
You too. See you next week, hopefully.
All right.
That is it for us. That's it for First Edition. It is a production of WEAA. The show is produced by executive producer Sean Yoes. Associate producer is Iorio Digizua. Our board operators are Andre Melton and Ty Rice. Our First Edition interns are Isaiah George, Wyman Jones, Kristen West, Janelle Ferguson, and Alex Blanc, Deja Braggs, Jonathan Williams, Miracle Chukwukaize, Drew Mitchell, and Valentin Davis. Stay tuned for Keep It Moving with Marsha Jews next, right here on Public Radio, WEAA, 88.9 FM. The voice of the community. I am Sean Yoes. Peace. Having money don't mean a thing. Loving you is everything.